Hi, it's Paul Bates with GreatDad.com, and I'm here on my weekly podcast talking to dads about a variety of subjects because I'm always tied into how modern dads are thinking about things. And today we're going to talk about education. And I really am excited to have this conversation with Mark Taylor, because versus other like education specialists, Mark is both an educator, but he also has done this like this incredible deep dive with a whole bunch of experts. So he has like this really broad knowledge. So welcome, Mark Taylor.
Paul, thank you so much for being here. It's great with the work that you're doing, and yeah, really looking forward to deep diving into what education is, both sort of academically, but also on that sort of personal level.
Well, thank you. I when we talked a little bit beforehand, I was just blown away that you've done 358 of your own podcast episodes since 2016, which makes you kind of a real pioneer in the field. But what is interesting to me as versus somebody who got, you know, maybe an advanced degree in education and studied different structures or models or whatever, what you've done is had 358 hour-long conversations with the experts, kind of like the way I do it, except you've got this niche that's in education. So you've heard all these different perspectives. And what I think what we're going to talk about today is synthesizing some of that information into what is going on with education today. I think these same themes sound very familiar. There's a lot of frustration around with parents around their education, concerned whether the kids are being educated as well as before, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So let's get into that. What are some of the headlines that you've learned through these 358 hours of the podcast?
I think for me, it's never about the academic. It's never about the knowledge that you need to know. I mean, I think one of the things we're all aware of now is that everyone who's got a phone in their pocket has the ability to be able to find any amount of information in an easy regard. So, and the other thing that comes across a lot is the fact that, of course, in society at large, you know, businesses are wanting certain skills and certain ways to be able to sort of bring their sort of organizations together, and they're not necessarily the skills that are being taught
right.
in school.
Right.
And we sort of go around that circle, you know, that even sort of educators sort of know that what we're having to do is not necessarily what children are going to need in the future, and certainly the way that sort of the world is changing so fast. So I think the thing that comes across is the fact that despite all of that, we know we need to support the child at the heart of what that is. And that very much often comes from what is it that they feel? What is it that they kind of need? And often that's that relationship idea, which I think in the modern day of sort of social media and technology and that kind of thing, it's understanding who they are and how they can come across and how they can communicate. And one of the things I mentioned on my show is I ask, you know, is there a learning experience or a teacher that people remember? And it's never about, oh, it's the person who taught me this particular fact in history or how they taught me to do maths or do some kind of algebra. It was very much that kind of, there was something going on and this teacher saw me. You know, we had a relationship where actually they understood who I was. I felt confident. They were able to show me what it is that I needed to do to sort of build my confidence and move forward. And then the academics and the subject and all of that were kind of built on that. And it's those people that seem to have this thread through every conversation that I have. It's the being seen and being understood and being heard. And from there, you kind of take that going forward. And so sort of education seems to be this massive thing where you're learning lots of stuff, but I think a lot of it actually is just sort of taking that kind of step and that understanding and that thought of who am I, what do I want, and how can I then go about it? And it starts really with that kind of sense of who's my network in that kind of inverted commas, you know, it's the people who've got my back and the people that see me and can then point me in the right direction, whether that's another teacher, whether it's a mentor, whether it's a coach, whether it's taking a subject maybe I hadn't thought of because they can see something within me. But you need that sort of trust value, I think, to begin with.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because I think most kids are in the middle on the bell curve, and they know that the kids who are getting the attention are the superstars, whether the superstars as athletes or in the classroom, and then the kids who are the problem kids. And quite often the kids in the middle kind of, they miss out on some of that personal attention and that inspiration. And hopefully everybody's had that experience of one of those teachers that you're talking about who took you aside and said, you know, you should read this, or I see this thing in you that you need to work on. And it's an exciting thing. Interesting in your comments too, is this idea of what does education do for the kids? Because this is a huge debate right now, whether whether kids should be educated to be in a trade and get a return on investment on their education, or whether we're learning, where kids are learning to be better human beings. What is the attitude right now? What's the common thinking on that dichotomy?
I think very much it depends on the circumstance. And I think that's what makes education so hard, because you kind of hope that education and your school is this wonderful environment that's teaching you, like say, the skills you need, the understanding you need as a human, but also, like say, those skills, whether we like it or not, there's a certain set of sort of exams or certain sort of benchmark you need in order to progress, whether that's into a trade or college, university, and that kind of thing. But often, you know, that's assuming you've got a great school. You know, sadly, there are some which aren't delivering for that for everybody. The flip side of that, of course, is that you hope you've got a fantastic home life, and that means that you're supported by your parents, and therefore, you know, you've got everything you really need. You just go into school to learn a few things, and then you take that forward into your life. And of course, there are many people who aren't in that situation. So I think one of the things that comes across is it becomes very personal. So yes, it seems to me, and one of the reasons I think education is struggling is because it doesn't quite know what it needs to be. Yes, it needs to be the academic side, because there's the governments and people needing the test results and then being able to sort of marry them against other people and who's best in league tables. And certainly here in the UK, that's a big thing. But also then, you know, it's that child well-being and then the ability to support them and have that sort of rounded human being. The thing that I think comes across mainly here is the fact that one of the best ways to do that is to have a broad and rich curriculum. But because of the time constraints, that sort of is certainly happening here less and less, because, you know, the arts are being diminished. Right. The opportunity to do these broad subjects is much more focused on the English and maths and technology and the sciences and that kind of thing. All great and really important things. But those are the things which you can test and you can kind of get those results in. So I think it really sort of comes down to that sense of, you want it to be a safe environment. You want it to really support the children. But educators are then realizing that because of these things, because you've got the narrowing of the curriculum and you're not having this balanced environment, children are then struggling. So then they're not just educators in those subjects. They then become, you know, the well-being need that the parent in school, as it were, the person is having to support their children as well. So that just takes up then a whole wealth of time, because half the class might just need an academic teacher. The other half might need that kind of real sort of personal element. It may well be that there's people struggling in different ways. You know, I mean, some of the people I speak to, that they really understand the fact that some of their children are coming in and it's all very well said, we need to teach them X, Y, and Z, but they need breakfast. They're not getting that anywhere else. Or they need a safe environment. They're not getting that anywhere else. And so, you know, they're really having to sort of jockey for the position in terms of knowing what every child needs, which obviously takes time. And of course, that then gets really, really difficult, because you're really under the cosh within a school situation, because you've got all these time constraints and the changing of lessons and all the rest of it. So I think that's what's making it so hard, because what can you do? You know, do you sort of just focus on one? Do you just focus on the other? Do you try and do all of it? And then hence the reason teachers are working, you know, millions of hours a year and struggling themselves, and then they get into that kind of burnout situation. And I think that's the hard thing, because you're having to really kind of please and sort every child, no matter where they're from, whatever their background, whatever their age. And so, you know, to kind of not answer your question, really, I think that's the dichotomy. It's the fact that you need to be everything to everybody.
But I think that's on a macro level. I mean, looking at education as a whole, I would guess that most people listening to this podcast are not looking at that, you know, that big picture. They're most interested in what their kids are being taught and whether they're either focused on a return, preparing them for some job, or whether they're trying to create well-rounded human beings, as you suggested. How much has education changed versus when we were going to school that eliminates or reduces the amount of time that is about that well-roundedness picture? Because I think that's important for modern dads to understand that if kids are just going to school now, their kid's education is not going to resemble the education of a generation ago, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, in my experience, it's very much that sense of, you go to school because you had to, and that's still the sense now. But I think for me, it's that idea that you're going, you're having fun, you're playing with your mates. We sort of chat with our kids, and it's that kind of, well, what did you do in the holidays? It's like, I was out playing football, and we were hanging out with our mates. We'd leave in the morning, we'd come back in the evening. you know, we just had a really nice time. And yes, within the school time, you know, we had probably a broader range of subjects to do, but it was just, you go and you did it. You studied in the way that you did. You enjoyed your sort of your recess time, and then you came home and then you did some stuff that you wanted to do. Now it's very much more, one, I think that you should not ask any questions, because the feeling is that you should know the answers already. So that sense of putting your hand up and saying, oh, I've just got a question a minute, you know, kind of gets in the way of that sense of learning, which of course is the essence of learning. Because when we know from sort of outside the school gates, then actually it's about the question in the community and the working together and that kind of thing.
So you're saying, just to be clear, you're saying that it, rather than the kids having more of a, I don't know, a Socratic experience where they're kind of like, they're getting asked questions and having to think about things, they're expected, they've got a list of things they have to learn, and we're just going to talk about that. Any questions that are to the side, they don't have time for. Is that what you're saying?
I think to some extent, but I think it's also the fact that the children feel like they should know a lot of the things, even if they haven't done it. So I think there's certain times where you're going to have discussion, and like you said, that's going to happen as part of it. But I think there's also a sense of, you know, by the end of, you know, year four or grade four, you need to be at this level. And so if you're struggling, you're not, you're just going to keep your head down. Like I said, that sort of middle ground of just kind of, if no one's spotted that you're not struggling already, you're just going to keep your head down and do it. And hopefully sort of until someone sort of spots that. And so I think that that's the main real difference, is the fact that you can't just sort of do it and sort of mosey through and do the best you can at the end. There's those expectations of what you should have at a certain time. And certainly here in the UK, you know, even at the age of sort of 7, and then you've got 11, and then before you get to sort of main GCSEs, it's sort of 16, and then going on at 18. There's that sense, there's always something that should be happening and something you should be focusing on going through. And I think that sort of slightly carefree feeling that I certainly had when I was younger, I think gets diminished much earlier, if that kind of makes sense. And sort of that sort of elementary school kind of time, or primary school here in the UK, you know, when I'm in a school and I sort of, well, you see a child sort of skipping down the corridor and they're sort of happy and just kind of just in the moment of what they're doing, you kind of think that's what it wants to be. And I think we just need to extend that so that they feel that as they go older. And I think that's true from a home life point of view as well. You know, it's very easy to sort of get locked into this is the next thing we've got to do and have all these structures and that kind of thing. And I think just having a bit more time and a little bit more freedom, I think, is probably the main difference than what it was from what I experienced to maybe what it is now.
Right. But we're kind of locked into what we have now. What do you say to parents or fathers who would prefer that their kids have a like a more positive experience and a little bit more free flowing that isn't as focused on these results? Here in the United States, we have No Child Left Behind. We have a lot more standardized testing. The intention was good because they knew their kids were just, you know, just continually being promoted and without having the knowledge base. But I take your point that it kind of removes some of that spontaneity and fun that people may or may not have experienced a generation ago.
Yeah, I think from a dad's perspective, for me, it's very much about having these ongoing open conversations. It's kind of, you know, you have to go to school, so therefore it is what it is. You know, you might have some kind of idea of being able to say, well, maybe this school rather than that school when you're sort of moving between schools, and this is the type of feeling or the type of ethos that I'd like to sort of step into. But assuming that you kind of are where you are, it's that sense of, you know, what's important to you? Go to school, work hard, ask those questions if you can, you know, get involved in the extra things. So, you know, one of the things that we did, you know, if you want to do some sport and you're not getting enough sport in school, then we'll find you something to do that. If you want a musical thing outside of school, then we can do that sort of thing. You know, just because someone within school says you've got to do this piece of work or whatever, or it should look like this, you know, I sort of say, well, let's question that. You know, it may be that you still have to do it, but how are you going to go about it? Can you turn around and say, I understand that this needs to be done, but can I not do it at the end of the weekend or next week? Can I have a little bit more time? And why would that be? Because actually, as a family, we've got something really important this weekend. And then you start to understand that that's more important than just doing what you've been told you have to do. Not because you're kind of kicking off or you want to sort of make a point, but because actually in the round, and the only person, this sort of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, that kind of the child-centered idea of what it is. You know, what does your life look like this week? So, okay, we've got this number of clubs out of school. You know, like I say, maybe there's a family reunion or some kind of get-together over the weekend. Well, that might take up the whole weekend. And so it's okay to kind of prioritize that. And I think as long as you can articulate it and talk about it in those terms, then hopefully that gives the confidence for your child to then go and say to the, you know, your teacher, if it happens to be, no, I'm really sorry, but I know this is coming up. Maybe, you know, can I have an extra couple of days? It's not that I'm not trying to, but this is the circumstance. And I'm sure in sort of 99.9% of the cases, they go, absolutely, go and have a great time. This is a really important thing. And then I think you kind of get the sense that you're giving your child a little bit of confidence and a sense of taking their own control of their destiny. And I think that's then a really positive thing as well, because they see all of the different strands that they've got going on in their life where they can control it with a bit of confidence, but also a little bit of skill. And I think that's something which is a really beneficial thing going forward.
Do you have any advice for how parents can set that up for success? Because I know in the case of our own kids is that maybe they tried that once at age 6 or 7, you know, tried to have a somewhat adult conversation, but more just asking a favor, asking for an exception, asking for another day or whatever. And they got a negative response. And then, so then they kind of get trapped into this kind of feeling like, I don't want to do that again. So I've talked to other educators who've talked about giving your kids like certain challenges that they can succeed at so that you can build that confidence. Is there a way that you recommend that you set the kids up for success in having that kind of conversation with a teacher?
I think for me, it's being authentic. I think it's being honest and being truthful about why you're doing it. And I think also it's acknowledging you don't know what you're going to get back. Because like I said, hopefully you get that positive response and it would be fine. It might be that this particular teacher says, well, do you know what? No, it's there for everybody. You've got to make it happen. Right. And then you have to kind of think about those things as well. And I think also just sort of broadening out the idea of who your community is. You know, if you think about your family, you know, how do you get on with everyone in your family? You know, some people you've got a really warm relationship with, someone you kind of know is maybe a little bit more frosty or however that happens to be. The same thing in your class, the same within maybe a group of teachers that you've got. You know, this one teacher will react in one way, this teacher may react in a different way. So I think you just have to like give them that confidence of yes, you might not get the answer you want. And you might, like I said, at age 6, maybe you didn't get a positive one, but we're going to do it again because you're not doing it to make a point or to learn something specific other than you were doing it because in this scenario, you know, you wanted to go on that family reunion or meet up. So you just have to keep doing it. And I think when you get a negative response or you want to create that positive responses that you're doing, I think it's just that repetition, you know, just keep going, just ask it again. And actually don't, when whatever response you get back, don't make it too personal, because it's not probably about you. It's probably much more about the person that you're dealing with. And that might sound a little bit kind of old for some of the younger children, but I think a lot of this is just about ongoing relationships and ongoing conversations and an environment that you're creating at home. And I think that the older I've got and the older our kids have got, the more that seems to have come to fruition. You know, it's that kind of, oh, right now we're going to sit down and talk about X, Y, and Z, and you're old enough for us to have a conversation about learning or changing schools or whatever it happens to be. And then it becomes a bit kind of, oh, I'm not quite sure about this. We're suddenly having a serious conversation about something, or we're trying to learn something, or we've now grown up. I think it's lots of little conversations on an ongoing basis, which kind of just builds that kind of confidence and also that sense of it's okay, because, you know, we've got our nucleus here. You know, our family have these conversations. I'm doing this from an understanding of who I am and what I'm trying to do. And obviously that language is going to change when you're 6 compared to when maybe you're 16. But I think you start to understand about it's all part of the same thing, and it just broadens as you get older.
I wonder if there's something in there too about not making the stakes so large, so that you're not asking your child to take on the full responsibility for making a miracle occur, but that you're trying to get them to just have a conversation, just have a low stakes request, rather than, you know, we got that family reunion. You got to skip school on Friday. So you got to go in there and tell them that you're not going to be there and get the teacher to agree with you. Okay. That's your job for today. And then the kid fails and then everybody feels bad. I think this is a huge challenge, especially with the younger kids, of talking to authority in a way that they're able to have a real conversation and at least in that moment, put their teacher kind of at the same level, like a, just a human response. I've got a request. It's not a, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not a drama, but I have this request. Can you help me out?
Yeah. And I think also maybe having a solution as well, like you said there, you know, it might be that I know this deadline has been put in place and I understand that. Can it just be Monday rather than, or it's Tuesday rather than Monday, right, or whatever that happens to be? I'm not trying to say I can't do it. I'm just, you know, and I'm coming to you to ask what that situation is. And I think, and maybe giving a solution and then sort of providing the opportunity for them to say, yeah, that's a great idea, because it kind of takes the pressure off. It means that you've thought about it. You're actually able to then have that mature conversation. Like I say, whatever age that happens to be and how that's going to come across. And I think those are the sorts of things that educators and anyone involved with children kind of thinks, well, that's a really smart thing to do. It's a mature thing to do. I'm seeing something in this child which I'm, you know, I'd like to be able to other children to see and be able to share and that kind of thing. So I think it becomes a very positive thing that just by sort of making that effort to do it with that solution in mind or that sort of option of how you could move the situation forward.
Yeah. You also talked about the fact that a lot of the things that we took for granted growing up, music classes, art classes, theater, all these things no longer are part of the curriculum because of financial cutbacks. And that's kind of worldwide, I think. So do dads really have to start out and backfill for those things and tell, you know, set up, you know, a music class and all these things? Or should they wait for their kids to have an interest in like art or drawing to then put them in a class? How do you navigate that when the schools are no longer providing that experimentation that's so important in the early years?
I think that idea of abroad experiences is important. And I think, I mean, it does depend on where you live and what those opportunities right. are, but normally somewhere in your sort of sphere or within your community, there'll be something that's going on that might open that up. And it might be through another organization, you know, whether it's sort of girl guides or scouts, or whether it's through a church, or whether it's through a friend of a friend who sings in a choir, and you can, you know, you can go and listen to a concert and that kind of thing. But and I think, you know, having said there are cutbacks, I think there are still opportunities to at least have an initial experience. It might be you have to be more hands-on to take it forward to a higher level. And so that may be where sort of the outside clubs come in, or whether those supports. But I think it's just that idea of, you know, where do their interests lie, having given them that experience, and then how do you then want to go forward, that sort of following their passion and that kind of thing. And I think within that, maybe it really is that, yeah, where can I see that is lacking within the school and they can't do it? I mean, my daughter was really into gymnastics. So there happened to be a really sort of local Saturday one, literally just down the road. And she kind of did that and then got to the where she was at a standard sort of above where the classes were going because they were quite beginner. But then there was the opportunity to go to the next town and then do that, which involved us having sort of more commitment, you know, a couple, two or three times a week to go and have sort of those sorts of things going on. But there was always a way of doing that. But then also there became a ceiling. She's like, yeah, I am enjoying this, but I don't want to take it to the next level. And so they then start to see you need to put the effort in. You need to show where that sort of trajectory goes so that you can, this is how you can proceed and you can progress in these things. But then actually maybe that's enough of that now. And then we'll do something else and see. So I think it's kind of seeing what you have within school. What have you got within your community, friends of friends, people that you do? And I think there's a little bit more sort of philosophy in terms of that you can kind of get a little bit sort of knotted up in terms of I need to sort this, I need to sort that, I need to sort the other, and actually being a little bit more kind of relaxed about it. I think these things happen quite naturally. It's amazing. I don't know, it's been like buying a new car. You think, oh, I need a particular car to do a certain thing, and it sort of comes into your mind, into your imagination, and then you see lots of cars like that on the roads, and then you happen to come across one that happens to be for sale down the road that you would have never thought about. And I think sometimes taking the pressure off yourself as a dad and within your family to then sort of think the right opportunities will come at the right time. Let's just be aware of what we're trying to do, where we are, what our kids are looking to do, and then support them and allow it to happen. Yes, you've got to then obviously maybe make a phone call or start a club or do whatever it happens to do, but don't be too kind of, I need to write a list and phone a million people and give them all those experiences all at once. Just see how it goes organically.
Yeah, well, I think I'm hearing a headline here is don't go overboard, but you have to, versus prior generations, as a modern dad, you have to take a little bit more initiative in terms of making sure your child gets those broadening experiences, because it, once you do your homework, you may discover there is no music program or there is no poetry or whatever the thing is that you feel is important in your mind of how your child should develop.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, music was something which was important to me. The only reason I did it is because when I went to secondary school, so sort of age 11, 12, you had to learn a musical instrument. And I thought the drums sounded like the best of a bad bunch. Had some lessons, absolutely loved it. It was paid for a large proportion of what I did, and it opened my world and became a professional drummer. I know, I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, from my dad's point of view, you know, he supported me not through giving me that opportunity, because it happened through the school, but the rest of it, he supported me massively, because once I got really into it, there were music centers and concerts.
Yeah,
and I joined
yeah.
this band and that band. And then there's a lot of traveling and support that way. So again, that sort of organic thing, he wasn't the person that gave him that initial opportunity, but without his support and his sort of ability and willingness to kind of support me in it, I'd have never been able to progress it from that level. And that's, but it sort of happened in that natural way. Whereas I think, had I not necessarily came across that school, maybe I wouldn't have been a drummer, but I'm sure I would have come across something in some way, because I would have heard some music somewhere and maybe had that opportunity. And then, like I say, maybe their impact would have been a slightly different route, but I think it would have probably still maybe ended up in the same situation.
Yeah, well, that whole idea of finding your passion, I think that's a challenge. But is that, do you think that is the role of a dad or a parent to try to help the child actively search for that thing that's really going to turn them on? Like, as you say, once they do find that thing, quite often there are lots of ways to fill it in, but they have to be exposed to usually a broad variety of things before they can find the one that really makes them excited.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, because my wife and I are both musicians, and we knew from an early age, it's like, I'm just going to do this. I'll find a way, you know.
Oh, yeah, and that's what, and sort of, I'm so envious of people like you who knew what their passion was at an early age. You just go for it. I mean, you're a starving artist. You know, that's what you have to do to, you know, to be happy, and everything else is immaterial. It's such a great gift you've had.
Yeah, for sure. And I absolutely love it. But it's interesting what you say there in terms of sort of making you happy, because, you know, we got three children who have three different ways. And our youngest one, you know, she's perfectly happy in her own skin and absolutely enjoys the things that she does. But she doesn't have that need to kind of drive in any particular way. She enjoys her sport. She's a very talented musician and did it for a while when she was younger, but it came to a natural end. And we're thinking, oh, but you've got so much opportunity here to do that. And she's like, but I'm not you. And you think, no, you're not. And we don't know what her path is. And so we had to sort of take that slightly sort of a step back as parents. And certainly as a dad, it was that kind of, well, okay, you're telling me this with, you know, with real purpose and understanding. And, you know, it may well be that it opens up at another stage. But actually, the most important thing is, you know, are you well? Are you healthy? Are you enjoying life? Do you have some friends that you're enjoying being with? And, you know, she sort of found that sort of thing within a sporting arena rather than a musical arena. And she's not passionate about it as much to, you know, be a professional sports, an athlete or anything like that, as far as we know. But then I also know people who just sort of do school and they enjoy life. And then in their 20s, they suddenly find something that they're really passionate about and they want to spend their time doing. In the moment, we're hearing from her that it's that kind of, I really want to travel. And I think, yeah, you can certainly see her, you know, come alive a little bit, and there's a little sparkle in her eyes. And so, you know, she had the chance to go to a different country at school, and we're sort of hoping that one of the choices that she's going to make when she goes to the university is got a modern foreign language element to it. So she's really looking forward to doing that. And so it might be that she's going to get that and she's going to do that, but it's just going to be like 10 years later in life than it was for us. And I think just being okay with that, and just, you know, it'll happen whenever it needs to happen in that particular way. And just having that environment and having that bed of support that whenever that comes along, it's there for you, and not sort of over pushing it, as it were.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that you should actively help them find their passion, whether it's in the school or something outside of the school, giving them as many opportunities as they can. But if they don't necessarily find that passion, that's not necessarily a failure on your part, because you don't know when that's going to come. It could come earlier or it could come later.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think it always goes back to these sort of all these conversations that are going on. You know, if you kind of feel like there's something they want to do, but they can't, then that's a different conversation. If it's just that they have a range of things they enjoy doing, and that's taking them in a direction generally, then that's okay too. I mean, I sort of look back maybe a year, 18 months ago, when we were talking about my youngest doing her exams. It's like, I wouldn't even know what subject she was going to take. And now she's been through that one system. She's done all her GCSEs. And just as we were getting into that, suddenly she's a bit older. She's like, yeah, I'm going to be doing German. I'm going to be doing psychology. I'm really enjoying business.
Yeah.
I think this will give me the chance to be able to take this particular subject at university, which I think would be really fun because it enables me to go into Europe and do. And then you're like, I can see that passion coming now, you know, and even a year ago, that was not even on our radar, but all of a sudden it kind of comes into focus. So yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. What do you think about also this real emphasis now on STEM, which I really wrestled with this because obviously you need to have an understanding of science, and the science is in a lot of attacks on science right now, but understanding those disciplines is important. Yet there's almost an overreaction, I find, in STEM, and not all kids are good in STEM or turned on by STEM. What have you learned from your conversations about that balance of STEM or no STEM or STEM or partially STEM?
Well, yeah, I think, again, it comes down to the individual, because the thing is that if you are science-based, if you are math-based, if you really enjoy that kind of thing, then you've got a great world to walk into, because, of course, you know, it's what the education system is leaning towards. It's where some great jobs are. But if that's not what you're into, I think the problem at the moment is the fact you feel a little bit like a failure, because if you don't have the dance classes and the music classes and all these other subjects where you could be the person, oh, they don't particularly like STEM, but look how they're succeeding over here, then that becomes particularly hard. And I think also you can have the two things together. Our middle child is currently at university doing engineering. So STEM's a big thing in terms of that. But he's a fantastic musician and absolutely gets a real thrill and has a real passion for music and is doing great things through his sort of university experience with that. And he, in some ways, is wrestling in that kind of thing, because his heart is telling him, I love doing this. This is absolutely brilliant, but I'm here studying this other thing, you know, and your brain's sort of saying there's a great job here, you know, but should I be following my passion like we're talking about before and just doing what I really love? Or is there a halfway house? You know, can I combine the two things together? And it's an individual conversation with each person, and you kind of find how that works for you. But I think that's the problem with STEM at the moment, is the fact that, like all of us, we all have different interests and different focus. So if you're okay at it, then it's great, because you can kind of just do it and you do pretty well. If you're really good at it, then you've got great opportunities. I think if you really struggle with it, then it's very easy to feel like that sort of failure. And also then, do we still give them the recognition about the great people they are and what they have to give to the world in a different area? Because it might be that actually the skills they have and their ability to support people in the world isn't STEM related, but actually, depending on what you need in your life at any given time, actually, maybe, you know, maybe it's not actually the engineer you need. It happens to be, you know, a person of faith or a nurse or someone that's just able to be kind to you.
I think this area has been particularly difficult for young girls, because they there's such an emphasis on making sure there's equality and that girls come up to the level of boys, but not all girls want to do STEM. I mean, maybe the end result will be that there will be total equality if they keep on pushing at this, but the girls who don't like STEM end up quite often feeling like they're less than because they're interested in a lot of other things. It's a really interesting change, and I think dads just need to be aware of that dynamic, and whether, you know, as monitoring your kids and talking to your kids, where their passion is versus what society is saying you have to do right now, because society is sometimes quite wrong about what, you know, where to put all your eggs, and you have to find also who your child is, I think you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've heard you chatting before about, you know, opportunities that you can do as a dad with your child, you know, in terms of, you know, My daughter did work experience with me and actually, you know, had certain things, but she didn't love it because it was a podcast. And I think she particularly loved it because it was something I was passionate about. She actually quite liked the nitty gritty of the organization. And, you know, she got some emails together and organized some sort of behind the scenes stuff. And she really liked that for what it was, not just because it was something I thought she'd be able to do and the skills that she would learn and that kind of thing. And like you say, I don't think that's necessarily a boy-girl thing. That just happened to be a personality thing. And, you know, you only have to look at really young children. You know, you can have the most sort of diverse situation set up, but there still seem to be some sort of elements and leanings towards, you know, boys like doing this, girls like doing that. I mean, if you've ever been in a house of just boys, you know how much energy goes in and how much energy needs to get out of them in order for them just to live on a day. And yet there happens to be a house of girls and, you know, sometimes they're just happy just to be in and doing what they're doing. And I think, you know, there's that nature nurture and also, you know, girls are different than boys and actually having a sort of equality is important to have the opportunities. But then also, you know, what makes us who we are, boy, girl, and then personality traits as well, makes it very, very complex. And I think that's when it starts to slightly do your head in. But then when it comes back to the, who are you? Who am I? Are we talking the same language? Are we speaking, you know, together? And I think then you can have the next conversation or actually take the next step. And I think that's all you can ever do. And I think that at that point, you kind of feel like, yeah, okay, we're on the path. It's going to support us in one way or the other.
Well, that sounds like a good note to wrap up on, because I think it underlines a lot of what we talk about almost every week in this podcast is about being intentional as a father. You can no longer outsource a lot of this stuff. You know, back in the day, your kids would just go to school and they'd come back and you'd say, how was school today? And then that would be it. But now you have to take a little bit more active role. And part of that is being a present dad, talking to your kids, having these, like you said, mini conversations and discussing where they are at any given time so you can better help them and support them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I don't actually think that's necessarily a bad thing either, because, you know, there is that kind of dad went to work, came home, and then, you know, we had a relationship. I think those relationships have to be different, like say, because of the time and the interest and the conversations you have to have. And, you know, like I say, while it could be trickier in some ways or another, I think there's a lot of benefit in that as well, because I certainly probably know my kids better now than I would have done had that not been the case.
Yeah, I totally agree. Both for the child and for the dad as a human being, the relationship with your kids is just a magical, wonderful thing. So you can find Mark Taylor at educationonfire.com. And you have the podcast is with that same title. You can find actually the episodes on educationonfire.com or search for Education on Fire. And there are 358 subjects to choose from. Probably you don't want to listen to all of them, though I'm sure he'd appreciate if people did. But there's a wealth of different niches that you can dive into. So and also on educationonfire.com, there is a free downloadable PDF with a whole bunch of resources about the education and I would guess relating to a lot of the topics we've talked about today.
That's right. Yeah, it comes from some of the things that the guests have produced and are into. And I think it sort of fits nicely into what we were just saying, is that every child's different, every person's different, every situation is different. So hopefully in there, you know, it's not necessarily about the topic, it's about the threads that are the same throughout. But, you know, if it happens to be related to English or it happens to be related to learning in this way or dyslexia or whatever it happens to be, you know, hopefully there's a little something in there that points you in the right direction for you to dive into to help your child as best you can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for making the time. There's a ton of questions I would like to have dug in deeper. I mean, education is such a big area, but that is going to be it for today. So again, I'm Paul Banish at greatdad.com. You can find me at greatdad.com/coaching. I also offer a course on using gratitude to find what we nominally call happiness in everyday life. And you can find that at greatdad.com/gratitude. And you can have that course for just $1 versus the $39 usual cost if you enter the code podcast1. So until next time, take Mark's advice, be as close to your kids as you can, ask them those questions, take the time to get to know them and have these little mini conversations, because that's the best way to support your kids as they grow up. See you next time.